moment you've all been waiting for.
You what? Showbiz.
Well, that hit the spot.
Hi guys, and welcome to episode one of the Gosscast. I'm Ali Ryan, the CEO and founder of Goss.ie. I'm going to be doing a series of interviews over the next couple of weeks with some celebrities, some influencers. We're also going to have some chats ourselves, the Goss gals, about some really interesting topics as well on the run up to Christmas. So I'm so excited. We've teamed up with Dresses.ie for our entire Gosscast series for the next 3 months. We teamed up with Dresses.ie recently for New York Fashion Week. We are genuinely all serious fans of Dresses.ie. So for all the latest trends, from dresses, of course, to jeans, jumpsuits, coats, shoes, everything, Dresses.ie have it all. So we are so excited that they have teamed up with us, and we'll be doing some very fun giveaways throughout the podcast series. So yeah, we are very excited for our first episode, and what an amazing guest to have first up. James Kavanagh, influencer, social media star. At this point, I think it's safe to say full on celebrity. And I talked to him in this episode about being famous, and he doesn't even think he's famous, which I think is crazy because he's probably one of the most well-known people in Ireland. Me and James have a really good relationship. We met a couple of years ago. Basically, Goss, let's say, wasn't even a year old yet, and James is just starting out. And I think a lot of people in the industry would know that we've always championed influencers from the very beginning, and we started writing about them as if they were celebrities. And I definitely was always like that with James. So it's been amazing to see how far he's come, and we're both very like-minded when it comes to success and positivity. So we had a really lovely, lovely chat, and I hope you enjoy it. So, episode one of the Gosscast. So excited that James Kavanagh is our first guest.
Woo!
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me as your first guest.
Thanks for coming on. And we were literally just talking off air before we started recording. I'm so excited for this one because I feel like I've been on the journey with you since when Goss.ie started. It's kind of when you were just starting out as well.
It's so weird. I was literally going to say that. Like, we've both been kind of on a journey together.
It's
and
so
both
weird.
Started at kind of a small, you know, part. And now we're kind of doing all these things. And
everything.
You have a podcast now. Yeah, we've been on it together in a weird way.
Been on it together. Yeah. And it's so weird because I remember when I first met you and you were working in a PR agency, and there was something about you, like, I don't know, you don't do like surveys about yourself, but when I talk to people about you, the one thing everyone always kind of says is that you have like this X factor. Oh. And I remember thinking that at the time as well. I met you, I just knew something big was going to happen for you, and you had all these mad ideas. And I remember even back then you talking about books, cookbooks, wanting to this, wanting to that, and you still had your full time job, but I was still like, no, I feel like this is going to go somewhere. And I think me and you as well both very much believe in positivity and making things happen, and
totally,
like, not taking no as an answer. Would you agree with that?
100%. And like, even before like I started to work for myself and do kind of self projects, like, I got crap points in the Leaving Cert, but I knew I was kind of gonna be doing stuff that I wanted, and I knew that wasn't gonna hold me back. And I know you're on the same wave as me, is you kind of block negative energy out, and you just kind of allow your positive thoughts to manifest into real things. And I know that sounds wishy-washy, airy, but I'm a genuine believer in that. And like, I didn't let the fact, I always wanted to work in PR, like, it was kind of a dream job for me at the time, and I never let my Leaving Cert points get in the way of it. And I was halfway through a course in Rathmines, and I didn't even get the full course, but I heard a job come up, and I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna, can we curse on this podcast?
Yeah, you can curse, it's the Gosscast.
After a while, I was like, fuck it, YOLO. And I just went for the job, got the interview, and then I was 6 years in that job and worked my way up the ladder in PR world to like manager level. And then I was like, right, I want to do something new. So yeah, it was, I do kind of talks where I explain my life so far, and I would love to be able to be Richard Branson or about it and say I had a 5-year plan and I did this and I achieved that and I did this, but I genuinely didn't. It's all been bit of luck, bit of like putting your neck out there and kind
perseverance.
Yeah. I think that's the key thing is perseverance and not saying, not taking no for an answer and so, not listening to people telling you you can't do this.
Yeah, this is going to say, because go back to like your leaving cert age, right? Because I know when I was that age, like I think I was like 15 and it was coming up to whether I was going to do a transition year or not. And I remember I didn't want to be in school. I hated school. And I remember my mom being like, what are you going to do? You're just going to drop out and play with your guitar? Because I loved singing and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And she was like, no, like you have to do school. So I was like, grand, I had to do it. Like when you're that age, and I'm glad I did it, like obviously, but when you're that age, everyone is telling you what you're meant to do and how you're meant to do it. So how at the time were you able to look at that situation and be like, no, I'm going to keep going? Because I'm guessing a lot of people around you would have been like, you have to get these results. Like, was there pressure on you?
There was, yeah. And when you are that age and you literally think the Leaving Cert and being in secondary school is the only way, the only door into being successful and happy.
Yeah.
And I say happy because success doesn't always lead to happiness, but it's like I was faced with the Leaving Cert and in my mind it was the only way to happiness, and if you didn't get X amount of points you were going to be depressed for the rest of your life.
I remember thinking that too. How wrong we both were.
I know, literally. Yeah. But I guess I was lucky in the sense that my parents are quite like loose in terms of what we want, what me and my sister and brother, what we wanted to do. And they never actually really told us we had to be a doctor, we had to be an accountant, we had to be kind of, you know, one of these like jobs that are great. But like my brother went off the beaten track, definitely. He went
and
down
ended
the MMA
in a great
route
path as well.
Yeah, exactly. So in a weird way he kind of paved the way for me, because
for anyone listening who doesn't know, maybe you live under a rock, James's brother John Kavanagh is Conor McGregor's coach and has been for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So when he did that, were you like, oh my god, you can actually do jobs that aren't in a college?
Pretty
like,
much, yeah. And he is the brains as well. Like he went to DIT and studied engineering, and he was amazing in school and really a really good mathematical mind, which I know is why he's so good at what he does, because
he's so strategic.
Strategic, and he has kind of a matrixy mind and can I think the maths kind of helps him out on the maths, the literal maths as well. So like the fact that he went down that beaten track and kind of showed that you don't have to be an academic or kind of have a highbrow job to succeed. My parents, I think, were a bit looser on me and a bit more lenient in that, okay, let him figure himself out.
Yeah.
And there was that room to kind of figure myself out. Like, I remember being young and wanted to be an archaeologist because I was obsessed with Egypt.
Oh my God, stop it.
Yeah.
So it's like, Camus, you're like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah. Totally obsessed with pharaohs and stuff. So I wanted to be an archaeologist and I was very serious about it. And I had my mum, likes to paint, and she painted this massive mural on my wall, and it was done in the sense that I was a dead pharaoh. So there was these like cartouches on the wall saying, here lies James.
Oh my god, I love that.
And I used to try and sleep like with my two hands on my shoulders, like
a pharaoh
would.
You were mummified.
Like I was mummified, so I was obsessed with that. And then I wanted, what did I want to be then? I wanted to be an actor then, and I wanted to, so I kind of was hopping around the place, and luckily I had parents that let me kind of explore like that. So that's what I did. And then at the end of it, I think I was too obsessed with all these imaginary worlds that my like grade suffered.
Yeah.
So then I found myself.
I would have been the exact same as well though. Like my mum used to say I lived in the clouds, but now I kind of understand what that means now. But back then I was sitting in class thinking about things or drawing things, like I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And I'm still like that now. So I think school is so hard for people. And one of the things I remember tweeting you about at the time, one of your probably best TV moments, I think, to date was when you did The Late Late Show and you spoke about bullying and everything in school. Something I'm a huge advocate of and I never really talk about. I was massively bullied in school. I moved to school 3 times.
So did I
had a terrible time. Yeah. And it's funny, I actually hear so many people kind of in the public eye or in this kind of industry that have gone through that. And it probably made me extremely ambitious as a person because I never felt good enough. I never thought people liked me. So I think in the back of it, I made myself do things that I thought no one would ever think I'd be able to do. And I kind of needed to better myself. So in a way, I'm thankful for it. But kind of wanted just to talk to you a bit about that, because I remember in The Late Late, you were talking about how, you know, that one person in class pretty much like changed things for you. And just for younger people listening,
for
a bit of advice of, and I, you know what scares me, and I don't know if it scares you, if Snapchat and Instagram was around when I was in school.
Oh,
The bullying levels, I say, is so much worse. So yeah, I guess, what advice do you have for people with that?
Well, I always say, like, you're never going to get rid of bullies. Yeah. They will always exist. They exist in the workplace. They exist in school. They exist everywhere. But you can be that one person to stand up for someone else.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me. I was really badly bullied by this one guy in school. And I always think he'd be great at marketing or something creative because he was so creative in the way the ways he would bully me. It wasn't just like, now, the main reason I was bullied was because it was an all-boys school and I was very obviously gay.
Yeah.
And I know things have come on now. And
Thank God.
But back then, you just could not be gay or show a little bit of gayness or you'd get the word faggot thrown at you every day.
Gosh.
But it wasn't just that. He wasn't just saying, "Are you faggot, you faggot." It was like he used to write notes and put them on my locker with his right hand and use his left hand. I found all this out years later. He used to use both hands to make it look like two different people were writing the letters.
Do you ever think maybe he was in love with you a little bit? Because it seems like he put a lot of effort in to get into your mind.
I know, yeah. I'm like, you know, that kind of Hey Arnold, Helga type situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he was in love with me and this is his way of showing it.
That is like so mean that he went to such effort.
Such creativeness. And like, and I remember this was the straw that broke the camel's back in a good way. He wrote this survey, "How gay is James?" Now that might seem kind of funny, but I was this person. I was 13, 14, had no clue who I was, was not ready to come out. You know, every person that's gay or whatever, they're on their own journey and you have to let them, you know, figure it out for themselves. And I just associated the word gay with a negative thing because all I heard every day was, if your sandwiches were a bit minging, they were gay. If your teacher gave you really a load of homework, that was gay.
Yeah.
So the word gay was a negative thing.
Yeah.
And why would I want to be associated with this negative thing?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not coming out. I'm not associating myself with that. So I became a shell and I was insular. I had no friends whatsoever.
Yeah, I was literally the exact same.
Yeah, none was... A total outcast would come in, like pray no one would speak to me, and just run home and play Harry Potter on my PC.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I did. And I remember my parents, like, they definitely felt sorry for me. And like, growing up, like having a kind of normal growing up experience, you go to discos, you go to the cinema with your friends, you do all this. I literally did not have that.
That's
no
mad.
Friends.
You're making up for the disco in now.
Oh, I am, big time.
That's
so
mad.
Yeah, that was kind of what was happening in school. And then this guy was bullying me and he passed around this survey saying, "How gay is James?" And then this one guy, Dave, stopped the note going past him, and it was the first time in 3 years someone had stood up for me. And that literally, not to be dramatic, but changed my whole perspective on life.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, hang on, if that one guy is nice, there's obviously more nice people.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, my world has opened up. So after that, I really became comfortable with myself. I did change schools after that, because it did get a bit much, the bullying. But yeah, that's what I always say to people. That's my advice, is be the person to stand up for someone else.
Yeah.
Because you can't try and stop a bully, but you
I
can
agree.
Kind of intercept and stand up for someone.
Yeah.
The bully will just get bored and bully someone else. But try and stop, be the kind of person to step in.
Yeah.
And also, not to encourage bullying, but for anyone who may be listening that is getting bullied, it kind of makes you a tougher person, I think. Like, my brother was bad around the place.
Was he?
Really badly bullied.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what got him into combat sport, was he wanted to defend himself.
Yeah.
And look where he is now, because he kind of got bullied. And I kind of feel that I'm a bit of I have tough skin because I got bullied. Mm. Like, I get trolled now online because of what I do, but it doesn't affect me whatsoever.
Because you've been through.
Yeah, it's literally water off a duck's back because I think I got bullied.
Yeah.
So if anyone is getting bullied, you will come out of it and you'll come out of it tougher.
A stronger person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. The amount of people who I remember were bullying me at the time, when I see them now, they're literally like, oh my God. Like, I nearly feel sorry for them because I feel like they didn't know what they were doing at the time. But I definitely think they made me who I am as a person. And when you're on your own a lot as well, when you're younger, you kind of have to fend for yourself. Even in your mind, you start getting a sense of who you are, what you're able to do. And then I had this obsession anyway of like having to be the best of the best then.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to go out there, I have to prove myself. And that's what led me into this madness.
Completely, yeah. So it pays off in the end.
Yeah. So yeah, you were touching on trolling there. I feel like you probably get it the least out of everyone.
Definitely.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
How do you handle it? Do you really not feel anything the odd time, no?
Yeah.
Some people get very bogged down. I've spoken to a few people who've been like, I can't sleep at night. It gets too much. They don't want to turn off their phone. They don't know how to ignore it, but
yeah,
kind of have to.
Like, I see some people doing what I'm doing, getting trolled, yeah. And it's vile. Some of the stuff is really like heavy. Now I'd get the odd thing, and I'm not going to lie, it does bother me, but only for like a little bit, and then I kind of get over it really quickly. And it's funny, you could be getting like I remember when I'm on TV or something like that with a really large diverse audience, that's when you get it. When I'm doing it on my phone and stuff, it's a very
diluted audience
who like me and they're supporting me. So but when I'm exposed in that sense, like when I was on Got Talent or on The Late Late or something, then I get it. And it's hard because you might get all this loveliness, but it's so funny. You concentrate on that one negative comment.
I think I remember you had replied to someone and it was like quite a homophobic tweet someone had sent you when you were in The Late Late. I was like, what year is it?
I know.
Sorry.
They said they were promoting AIDS.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because I was on. Like, what?
Right, okay.
What rock did you come out from under?
It's just such bizarre. And I think what's really hard about this industry that people kind of don't think about, like, influencers, celebrities, people in the public eye, they think everyone's having a great time and living life, but you are constantly like questioned. Everyone feels like they have the right to kind of say things about you, question you, say things about what you're wearing because you're on television, so I'm allowed to say it. There's this whole kind of idea here, which isn't really true. You're still a normal person. You're still reading
and
the
I
tweets.
Check my tweets and I check my mentions, so you see, and it does get you down, but and I'm lucky in the sense that it doesn't bother me, like in the grander scheme of things it doesn't, but for people who, like, I've seen people get off Instagram or close their accounts, and that's so horrible. And
the anxiety,
I actually don't think sometimes trolls realise that they cause this harm. I think they just are doing it to vent, but they don't actually see the repercussions.
I just feel like, you know, normal folk like ourselves, we vent in a WhatsApp group, do you know? Like, I would never comment on someone's page and go, oh my God, the state of it, but I'd probably say it in a WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
Everyone bitches, and, you know, no one really cares. I always say that to myself as well. No one actually cares about you. They're not sitting there 24 hours a day going, what's James Kavanagh? Like, I don't like James. Like, they said one comment and then they moved on to somebody else.
Yeah.
But it can feel like the whole world is against you at the
time. Oh, yeah. It's, and luckily, I've never had that kind of, you know, and it has happened to a certain people in this world. And you can, like, it happened to someone recently, and I reached out to them. I was like, are you okay after all that? And and they were like, no, I didn't sleep or eat for 2 days.
No,
and it's funny because when you're looking at it, you're like, you might talk about it for a minute and then you move on.
Yeah.
But for them, they think all this focus is on them for constantly. But it's not, though. But it's hard to forget that when you're in it, I think.
It has been a crazy couple of months in the industry. And I think, did you see Vogue Williams' documentary on RTE where she talked all about online? I thought that was really good.
It was,
And she really zoned in on, like, the kind of anonymity online and the stuff people were saying. And a few people would have said to me, like, oh, just ignore the comments, but no one knows what it's like to get, like, a DM and it's something horrible and it's like someone with no name and no picture and you're like, who sent that to me?
I know,
who sat down today and went, I want to send a horrible message to someone? So it is hard, but it's kind of part of the job now.
Oh, it is
really
weird. And I think a good way is to if you can, is diffuse the situation with humor. And like, I like, someone wrote this awful thing about, like, what I wear, and I put it on a t-shirt and I wore it.
Yes, I remember. I loved that.
Do you know, like, wear your hate.
Oh my god, you should bring out a line of just, like, all, although there's probably only 3 bad comments I've ever written about you.
I know there's more. I love those videos that celebs do of reading bad comments about themselves.
The tweets,
so I'm gonna bring out a fashion line of bad comments about me.
I think it would do really well.
Be gas. Yeah.
So obviously let's go back a bit to Snapchat, because do you still use Snapchat right now?
No.
Yeah, so I don't even have the app. Don't have the app. When you think about it now, that was literally your big launching platform.
It's the way I got into it.
Like, literally. But I remember speaking to you back then and you being like, you know what, I'm going to do something else. So it's not just about, like, when you left your job, you had a plan. You didn't have your 5-year plan.
I guess.
But you had a plan.
Yeah.
And you did use Snapchat and you were an influencer, but there was always something more. So when that rise happened, like, I remember me and you judged Miss Universe Ireland in Cork.
Down in Cork.
You had very much just started out, and I remember people, do you remember, were running up to you, like, asking for selfies, and you were like, what?
I know,
is going
it was
on?
So wild.
You were like, is Cork my market?
Yeah.
It's like, what's happening? So I suppose describe, like, those couple of months, like, what went on in your head? Like,
that was crazy. And what was good, I think, for like my head and everything was that me and William had decided before I got a following that we wanted to work together in a cafe. And Kurabini had informed itself, though, but we knew we wanted to open a cafe together. Yeah. So when that kind of happened, and I remember it was funny, I went on Snapchat on the Sunday and I was real late to the game. Like, everyone was on Snapchat at this point. But I kind of knew it as the app you'd use as an extension to Tinder or something. Like, there was a lot of rude pictures.
You'd be sending
your bits and bobs to someone you're flirting with because the content would disappear.
Yeah.
I don't think people knew about screenshotting back then.
Oh God, yeah, I know. It's so funny.
So I was like, oh, hi, I'm in a relationship. I don't need to flirt. Yeah. I'm not on a dating app. So I didn't use it in that sense. But then people were starting to use it as a vlogging tool and kind of like an extension to YouTube in a way. Yeah. So I was like, you know, I'll get on it. And all I was doing was scaring William. That was the only thing I was doing. Didn't know
those
what else to do.
Those videos were so good.
Yeah, they were fun.
God. Poor William. Like.
I know. He just scares brilliantly.
He's probably taken a few years off his life, but it's worth
definitely.
Your career. So it's grand.
Sure, it's got me where
yeah,
I am.
Yeah, it's fine.
William always likes to remind me that is that. He's like, I'm the reason you're doing all this. But yeah, I remember, say, I went on the Sunday and then the following Sunday I had 5,000 followers.
Oh,
following
gosh.
Was 10,000. So it was going up at that
so
speed,
fast,
which was crazy. So yeah, and because Kurabini was happening, I was like, hang on, I can maybe use this, what's going on, to promote Kurabini and use this as a springboard in a way. So
I remember before you even did the Kurabini thing, I started to notice you were snapping loads of what William was cooking.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a clever move. I think something's going to happen here. And it started becoming a part of your routine that it was like, what are you cooking, William?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so people got really into it then.
In the kitchen with me and William. Yeah. Like, it was like scaring, then cooking. Do you know?
Loving relationship.
And then we decided we'd do our first market, which was, God, almost 5 years
ago
at this stage.
It
was in the Teeling Whiskey Distillery.
Oh, yeah.
In Newmarket Square. That was kind of the first one. We did one in Dunleary, but that was the first one. And we used Snapchat to promote, like, whatever audience we had back then to promote it. And then loads of people came getting selfies with us.
Yeah.
But then they were like, oh, what's this? And they tried our banana bread. They tried our hot pot.
Bread went viral.
It did go viral.
I remember,
And then they just started to get into the food as well as kind of us, which was a perfect storm.
Were you nervous a bit that people might come just to see you and actually not like the food and then you'd be like crap?
Pretty much, yeah. But the food was so good that it spoke for itself as well.
Yeah,
so it was, they were lured in by a selfie, but then they kind of were sold by the food. Yeah.
God. And now obviously you have a cookbook that is nominated for a book award.
Yeah!
How are you feeling? That's so crazy.
I know, it is mad. Like, but what was great is, and for anyone listening who wants to get into food, markets are the way forward.
Really?
And
okay.
Catering, yeah, because you don't have massive overheads.
Yeah,
you know, you just, we rented
just
a little kitchen on South William
stuff.
Street. Exactly.
Yeah.
You just go into the market, sell your stuff, and then, you know, have the money. But like, the if you're opening up a cafe, there's like the overheads, the rent. So if you want to dip your foot in first, markets are great. So for the past kind of 5 years, we've been doing markets, catering events. And we've kind of we started to amass loads of recipes just from us cooking at home and stuff. And then when the book offer came around, we kind of had this bank of recipes and stuff. So we were kind of halfway there.
Okay,
then it was just a case of getting rid of stuff, maybe expanding more in the bread section, making a narrative out of the book.
And I've seen a lot of people, I actually haven't got your book, shockingly.
I should have brought you.
I know,
should have told
I need
me.
To get my hands on it. I keep forgetting to say to you, but when I saw on, I was actually out of the country, but I saw on social media a lot of people were opening it or whatever, and everyone was saying how beautiful it is as well.
Yeah.
So there's so many layers to the book. Not only are the recipes really good, but a lot of people talked about the aesthetic of it, so I'm guessing that was mainly you, was it?
Pretty much, it's a nice coffee table book, if anything. Like, it's so funny, we were in Cork for the launch the other week and there was girls coming up saying, I have no clue how to cook, but it looks so pretty on my coffee table.
Really?
I'm like, you know,
you do whatever you want.
Exactly.
But
the aesthetics were so important.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time Penguin had dealt with someone who was so involved in every step.
Really?
Like, we brought in our photographer, we brought in our designer. Usually you hand the reins over and they employ a photographer.
Yeah.
It's designed in-house. voice. It's not even an external kind of graphic designer. Whereas we brought Good as Gold, these two amazing women who have who made our brand what it is from the very beginning. They did our website, the Artichoke logo, the Caribbean logo. They did everything for us at the beginning. So we're like, we want them to do our book as well.
Yeah.
Because they get our identity.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've found if you look at some cookbooks, they don't really look like the person's Instagram or what their vibe is in general.
It's like a different part of them, I think.
Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes people hand over the creative reins, and we didn't want to do that. So we got our photographer was our photographer from the beginning, Breed O'Donovan from Cork. And she, we did everything from the font to the, it's a matte page, not a gloss page. Yeah. We didn't want a photo of us on the cover, which we fought for. Because we wanted it to look like a classic cookbook.
Yeah.
Which never really had photos of people on the front. It was just a lovely, beautiful book on your shelf.
Yeah.
So, you know, we made sure all those points were kind of, our boxes were ticked off.
It's great that you fought for things like that though, and you were so involved, because I think when there's a lot of celebrities, influencers, they get involved in brands, sometimes it's very easy for people just to be like yes and then let them do whatever, but it can be damaging to you as a brand, because if that book didn't represent you, like your fans would notice that, I think.
Totally, yeah. In a weird way, I wanted to look self-published.
Yeah,
you can self-publish
books. It kind
of
does look, yeah.
Yeah, like I wanted it to look like something we kind of knocked up in the house.
Yeah, just
you know
one
what
of
mean?
The biggest publishers in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nuts when you think about that.
Yeah, and we're so thankful for Penguin for allowing us to do that as well.
Yeah.
Which was a risk. A big risk on their point, because we are new in the game, fairly new, and they publish the Allens, they publish Roz, they publish all these like really established people.
Yeah.
They took a chance on us, and hopefully, you know, it's working out. So,
and how does William find this industry? I think maybe now he's settled into it, has he, after the last like 5-6 years?
Yeah, I think he always kind of was like laughing at me and what I'm doing and never really took it seriously. And then like when the cookbook came out, we had to do all this publicity for it, and we're doing all this stuff, and he's like, wow, like, you know,
it's actually happening.
It's actually happening, and he's kind of enjoying it, I think. Like I'm kind of watching him now in interviews and stuff, and he's his face lights up when he gets to talk about Caribbean as a place, and gets to talk about his mom and how he kind of
so close to home the whole thing.
So he's really like loving it.
And how do you honestly find fame? Because that is what it is. Like, you are famous in Ireland. Like, when you walk down the street, people see you. You go to nightclubs, people want photos.
Yeah.
It's obviously really fun and you have amazing opportunities, but is it a bit difficult to know that you can't really go on a night out without kind of being photographed or someone coming up to you? Or how do you find it all?
It's weird. Like, even like I definitely wouldn't call myself famous, maybe well known or something. I don't know.
You're on the television now, James.
I'm on the TV.
Once you make the TV, I feel like you're famous.
Yeah, especially the Late Late.
Yeah.
All the Neighbours.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's not something that phases me or not. Something I get down about.
Yeah.
And like, I genuinely, like, if someone wants a photo of me, I find it really like, I find that so cute, and I find that so, I don't know, kind of an honor in a weird way. I'm like, God, they want a photo with me. And also, it's so supportive. And as like, touch wood, like, nothing really bad has happened to me. So it's just all been love, really. And on nights out and stuff, I think it's a crack. And like, I know people always say their followers or whatever are the nicest, but like, I find the people who follow me are so gas.
Yeah, no, they're mad.
They're
like,
all
I love them.
Gas drunk bitches.
Like, I remember it was at an Electric Picnic one year. That's when I really started to see the people were like genuinely like obsessed with you. You were on the top of like the three stage.
Oh yeah,
and there was like hundreds of girls. Oh yeah, there was like girls all underneath, and they wanted you even just to get a selfie from above. So you like leaned over, and they all started taking videos, and you took a selfie, and they were all in it, and they literally were like delighted with life.
I know.
They didn't even have to go near you; they just wanted to be in the photo. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I was like, oh my god!
Do you know what? That was the first time I seen a following in real life, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was kind of when I properly established a following or whatever. And then I seen that, and they were screaming. I was like, is that
screaming
for me?
I actually was like, oh my God, is one of the singers up here? I was trying to figure it out, and then I was like, no, they're here for James.
And I remember like going close to the edge, and it was like, rah!
Like,
and then I'd back
screams.
Off, and then like I was like, this is amazing. Like, it was,
it's like the best photo ever. Like,
yeah, it was
so
gas.
Funny.
So no, it never bothers me.
Do you ever go incognito? Is there ever a morning where you're like, I do not, like, and you literally throw on a Leonardo DiCaprio cap and like head down to the shop?
Well, I guess when I like, the times maybe when it's like, oh my God, is on nights out when I'm locked and I look minging.
Someone's all like, I want a photo.
Yeah, all I'm concerned with, I look good.
Yeah.
If I look, because then you wake up the next day and there's loads of tag photos and I look so in bits. And you know, you're when like, you're locked, you think you look gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like
that Paris Hilton meme where it's like the night before her and Nicole Richie. I love it.
So honestly, always if you're listening, come up and ask for a photo, but make sure I look nice.
Yeah, make sure. You're like, edit me, please.
Yeah.
I must be so hard though. I would have the fear God in me if I realized people had taken photos of me the night before that I wasn't in control of.
Yeah, oh, it is.
I'd literally be like, oh my God, where is that gone?
Like, and then, like, you know, even, you know, when you're even like on nights out with your friends and you get messages being like, oh, you were something last night. Imagine getting that back from people strangers. You don't even know. And that has happened.
Oh my God, stop.
I've been on nights out and I'm in town the next day and like a girl would come up to me like, oh God, you last night in the Gilliton or wherever you were.
You're like, was I there?
What? Where was I recently? I was in Cork and this guy showed me a video me dancing with this girl on a bench somewhere. I think it was outside the Gilliton and I didn't even know that they were taking videos of me at that. And yeah, so
oh my God,
I can be a mess.
And that's actually one of the things I love about your stories and Snapchat always. A lot of influencers, people in the public eye, don't really show the mad nights out. And
you have pulled out a bit.
You think you seem more mental at the start. But people love seeing your hangover stories when it's the net. Everyone knows when James goes out, they're like, no, tomorrow morning he's going to be in bed and he's going to be dying.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's like, we're all your mother. We're like, here we go now. It's going to happen again. And it's same story, but it's so funny.
It's literally like clockwork.
Yeah. And you're just like, hi.
Because it's the only thing I can do because I'm so like lying down. So the only thing I can do is reach my phone and record
all
myself.
You've got.
Yeah. But no. Sure, who doesn't love good night out?
No. And then I want to talk about the TV stuff as well. So was that something that was in your plan ever? Because I know definitely the cookbook was.
Yeah.
Did you want to get into TV? Like, how did Ireland's Got Talent come about?
Again, no real plan, but loved doing TV bits.
Yeah.
Like I had done some expose presenting and I had done, you know, the odd appearance on The Late Late and I got such a buzz
the
off
odd appearance on the biggest show on TV, you know,
the odd one here and there. Yeah. No, but I'd get such a kick off it and such a buzz off it. So while I had no real plan to get into it, when it came around, I was like, yes.
You're like, yeah.
So how did it come about? I remember I got a call off someone in TV3 saying we're casting for this spin-off show for a new show called Ireland's Got Talent, and there'll be a spin-off show called Ireland's Got More Talent, and it's going to be like Big Brother's Little Brother type buzz.
Yeah.
So would you come in and screen for it? And I remember hanging up and ringing my mum and be like, oh my God. Like even to get that call was
amazing.
So I went in and
what was the screen test like?
Yeah, so I went in and actually the first day I went in, it was me and Glenda. We were paired. I think it was 9 pairs of different people were paired together.
Okay,
and I went in on the first day and Glenda was supposed to come in and something happened and she couldn't come in, so I went home. Yeah, and then they were like, okay, and then I got a call the next day being like, okay, Glenda can come in again. So I went in.
Oh my God, you're nearly had heart failure, did
you? And I was in on my own first and then Glenda came in afterwards, but it was so awkward. So TV was put in the corner of these X Factor auditions and they were like, and a camera on the other end, and they were like, okay, react to the auditions. And I was
like Gogglebox nearly.
What? Yeah, but the whole idea was that we were on side of stage reacting to something live.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm there and then there's 2 producers staring at me with a clipboard and then a camera, and then I'm like, and seeing these like kind of famous X Factor auditions that everyone's seen, and I'm like, look into the camera being, oh, isn't she great? Oh, round of applause. Like, but it was like no reaction from them, real awkward.
Oh my God.
And then Glenda came in and we had to kind of bounce off it. And I was like so thankful when she came in because there was someone to bounce off.
Yeah.
But we were both like afterwards, we're like, that was so weird.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds crazy.
I know. So we did that. There was about 3 screen tests and then Dustin the Turkey came in for one of them.
Right.
Which was another bit of madness.
You, Glenda and Dustin.
Yeah. And I'd never met, you know, the human attached to Dustin.
Yeah, he's so nice actually.
He's lovely. Yeah. And then he's on the floor with his hand in the air and we're reacting to these auditions from 2006. I actually left being like, I have not gotten that. Like,
really?
That is just was so weird, so awkward. Definitely haven't. Then got the call being like, we're really happy with how you performed, so you have the job.
How soon after was that?
It was It was about a week or two. It was really soon.
Were you nervous about it? Because I feel like you can be very blasé in a good way, and like you won't really have hang-ups and things. Were you thinking about it all the time?
I have huge issues with nerves.
Do you?
Honestly. Anytime I'm about to go on stage, about to go on camera, I feel physically sick.
Oh
like
God.
I'm going to vomit.
Oh my God.
Like even if I'm talking to a group of 10 people or 100 people or whatever,
yeah.
I'm so feel sick. But luckily for me, and I think it's the same for most people on stage, there's like the first 20 seconds are so rough and then you're fine.
And then once you're out there.
And then I love it. And I do talks in colleges and stuff and I'm so vomity, and then I get out there and I'm literally like, I want to cartwheel. I love a bit.
Want to live up here.
Yeah, kind of. But yeah, no, the nerves never go away. It's so annoying. I'm like, I've done so much of it now. I'm like, when are they going to go away?
Yeah.
I hate that sicky feeling beforehand.
But it is kind of what pumps in the adrenaline then as well, isn't it?
Like, it does.
It's the sick feeling and then getting out there.
Gives you the kick.
So what was it like then, the very first episode? Did you actually vomit?
Do you know what? They were kind of fine because it was just a cameraman, our producer.
Okay.
Glenda was brilliant. She's so like...
Such a professional.
She's such a professional.
Yeah.
And she'd give me... Like, I remember we were interviewing contestants and she used to elbow me when it was my turn to speak.
Okay.
So she was giving me all these secret cues that you wouldn't really notice, but it was such a help. Like, And then afterwards, she'd like give me little pointers of what I could do because it was my first proper presenting gig.
And a huge gig to get
as well. A huge one, yeah. So it was very nerve-wracking, but then I got real into the swing of it, and just as I got used to it, then the bloody live shows came around.
Yeah, I know.
Which were terrible. You were in the audience for one of them, weren't you?
No, the girls did go though. I couldn't go. The girls went.
They were so nerve-wracking, and we had to do this big entrance, and there was hundreds of people in the audience. And I remember I actually this was the point reason I got glasses. I remember we were doing this piece to camera on a live show, and the auto cue I was reading went a bit blurry.
Oh God! Okay.
And the letters kind of went like that, like they went doubly
while
I was live.
Fab.
And I was like, oh my God. And I remember Martin, the producer, was in my ear and fed me the line, so
oh
I got to
gosh.
Say it. But and then I got glass, my eyes test and got glass after that.
Right.
But the feeling of having an audience looking at you, these judges, Michelle Visage, Louis Walsh.
And the cameras.
And there was six cameras, I think.
Oh my God, such a big production.
All this, and then a producer in your ear talking to you as you're speaking.
Oh my God.
That was so hard to deal with, but I got through it.
You did, yeah. So when you think about it, you literally had never done anything like that in your life.
Yeah, it was really scary.
And
you're live TV
live,
as well.
Live, like you can't edit it.
Yeah.
You can't redo the snapshot.
No,
it's like, no.
You can't press X.
And did you feel like you kind of had something to prove when you got that? Were you like, right, everyone's going to be like, this social media guy is coming on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of always feel like that. I know people eye roll a little bit at me in certain things, especially with the cookbook and so, and they're like, oh, here he doesn't. And maybe I feel like, maybe it's a self-conscious thing, but I feel like I don't deserve it, or people think I don't deserve it.
Mm.
So like, I remember for the TV thing, I was like, there's definitely people maybe watching and ready, hoping I fail or fall.
Yeah.
And I remember when I'd make a little mistake, I'd beat myself up about it because I didn't want to look vulnerable or look like I was about to fail. So I would really work hard on kind of trying to make me not make that mistake again.
Yeah.
So I think I was extra tough on myself because I was conscious of people judging me and maybe even people that maybe deserved the gig more so than I did or something. I don't know. It's always a thing.
So you deserved it.
Yeah.
And I also loved the pairing of you and Glenda. I never in a million years would have put you together, but when I see you together, it works so well.
Yeah, it does. I think the me maybe being a bit rough around the edges and her being so polished works.
The yin and yang.
So
you're back for another series.
Yes.
So that's another very good sign, because the after shows and spin-off shows for all of these shows are always really kind of dodgy.
Oh, they're touch and go.
Sometimes they get dropped, sometimes they get moved to other channels, like no one really knows. But like, I remember seeing the figures for your show and everyone was like delighted. They were solid figures, they were really good. So you've proven yourself now. So do you think you're going to be a little bit more confident now? Maybe
for
not
sure. Yeah, maybe not vomiting. But I remember even by the last couple of episodes, we were in there just getting it done and we just felt confident.
Yeah.
So I think for season two, which we're filming now in a month, will be way better as well. I think because it was the first, like we were the spin-off show, but even the main show was the first time it was in Ireland. So everyone was kind of getting used to themselves.
Yeah.
So I think, we'll come back fighting now.
And then you told me this ages ago, so I'm so glad that it's out now, that you had your guest appearance on Amy Huberman's show. So now you're going from from TV presenting, cookbook, acting. Yeah. Acting. Like, how did that come about? And seeing you in a bath with Aisling B is just mental.
I know.
She's
mad.
Getting huge right now.
Yes,
and
massive.
Amy is like Ireland's sweetheart. So you're literally in a bathroom with two amazing women on national television. Like,
I know,
mad.
That was mad. I always loved it, like Amy Huberman. And we'd kind of like each other's things on Instagram.
So you're basically best friends.
Yeah, basically best friends. And then she slid into my DMs one day and was like, I've something to ask you. Can I have your email address? And I was like, of course, whatever it is, it's a yes.
Yeah.
So she emailed me and was like, would you like to do a little cameo in this show I'm doing? I was like, yeah, I'd love to. And then I did it, and I didn't know Aisling was going to be involved, and I got there and I loved her. I've seen her on all those 8 to 10 cats and all those.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's really funny. Got there and she's like half naked in a dressing gown, and they're like, okay, you're going to get in. I was only told in the day what it was as well.
Oh my God.
And they're like, you're going to be in a bath and this is your line, and I had to learn this line, and and then we did it, and it was mad. And we were in the bath for about an hour and a half, just me and Aisling. Okay. And they had this, you know,
was it an extra large bath?
No, it was filming. A normal
it was
bath.
A real bath,
and
right.
She was naked.
Oh my God.
Fully naked. I just had little boxers on, but they were using this whisk and fairy washing up liquid for the bubbles. There was no water, it was just bubbles.
Yeah.
So they had to keep filling this in every now and then. She was like, are my boobs showing? Like, we got to know each other very intimately by the end of that hour and a half. So it was really fun. And like, I was always mad into acting when I was younger. Like, when I was in primary school, I was always in the school play.
Okay.
I was in this acting group called Maeve Widgers Acting when I was younger, and she got me into the Morbegs, and I used to do little appearances in the Morbegs on RTE.
Did you?
Yeah, I was a kind of a rolling extra, so I'd be in the Morbegs every now and then.
So you were on the TV even before this.
This is it, and then I just never bothered again. And then years later, when this kind of came around, I was like, oh, and it was really fun to do it. So
yeah. So has it given you a little taste now of maybe some more acting?
Yeah.
It's such a because I actually make short films and TV pilots as well. I do about a million things too. And there's nothing like the vibe of being on set. It's so funny. It's like kind of being on a construction site with loads of workers. Everyone's having coffees, they're having a cigarette break. Everyone's sitting around chatting. It's lovely to be around like-minded people, actually.
That's what
I feel like set life is like.
Yeah.
You're sitting around. That's so crazy the way things are happening. Sliding into DMs.
Yeah, and that is how it's all DMs, I'm telling you, that's where it's at. That's
life
where the
changing,
hustling
social
happens.
Social media.
Yeah.
So what would you say, I suppose, is like the biggest misconception about you out there? Like, is there anything that you're like, oh my God, why would anyone even think that? I'm not like that at all.
Probably, and it's funny, I was only talking to someone about this today. Probably a big conception is that I'm really confident.
Yeah.
I'm not at all.
I would have definitely thought that.
Yeah, no, I'm
and
not.
I know you, and I would have thought you still like would always be one of the most confident people I know.
No, I'm real awkward, like sometimes as well. And like I was only to talk to my friend James today about how we're both real awkward when we meet people, and you have that like awkward conversation. If you know someone but you don't really know them, and you're tripping out over each other's words. And so I think probably like a big misconception is that I am very confident, but it's something I work on, and you have to keep working on.
Yeah.
And that I do get mad nervous doing things, but I have this weird drive, and I always feel like fears, you have to chip away at them.
Yeah.
And I think once you get over fears, doors open, and you realize a new strength about yourself.
Yeah.
And I do have this burning desire to do loads of things and do
succeed.
Them well, so it overrides my lack of confidence and my fears, I guess.
And was there any, because everyone always, you know, puts their best stuff on Instagram, looks like life is fab all the time. Were there any times when you left your job and you started doing this full time that you were a bit like, oh shit, after making the right decision, like when maybe money didn't come in or a job fell through, did anything like that happen where you were like, oh my God,
but
you just kept doing it anyway?
For the first like 3 months I didn't really make any money, and I was doing all these Nixers for PR companies, like freelancing, and I was like, what the hell have I done? Like, literally, what have I done? And I was feeling the pressure as well from my parents, because my dad, like my parents had, while I said earlier they were very free with what I was doing, and but they didn't really understand this followers. What does all this mean?
It's all
a bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
So my dad was like, what are you doing? You're leaving your job. You're full-time wage. You're getting insurance. You know, it's money every week. You've rent to pay. You've this. And so that was terrifying. But I kind of feel like once you put yourself out there and make a jump, the universe kind of throws you a little bones here and there. And then the work just started to trickle in. And I think once you leave yourself super vulnerable and exposed, it's a good thing. Because good good stuff can happen that way.
And I think you're right when you're saying you make the leap. I feel like when you jump off the curb, whatever, you kind of never go back. Because I had, in the first year of GOSS, pretty much my entire family and everyone I knew was like, what are you doing? Same thing, I had insurance. I had a concrete contract. Like, literally, I don't even know how I got out of it, like, in my job. But I feel like when you make the decision, I literally was like, at one point, I will sleep in my car if I have to make this work. Yeah. I remember thinking that, because we had like an offer to be bought in like the first year and it didn't go down well. I didn't want to do it. And I remember saying to the person who's trying to do it, I was like, you don't understand, like, this is my life. Like, I've made this decision. No matter what happens, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
And I think it was only literally the Gossies last year when I was like, I actually think I've kind of made it now. It's taken like 3.5 years. Last year, I was like, the hard work. And I think probably same with your family when you got TV3. I think when your family can physically see something, it's like when they see the awards or when they see you on TV, they're like, oh my God. And now I understand what you were doing. Like, this is what you're doing and now you're successful. Even though in our heads we've been doing work the whole time.
I know, yeah. But like, my parents only really took it seriously when they saw me on TV, when they saw the cookbook, when they see all these
in
things
they're
used
to. In the Irish Times and things like that. When
in the Irish Times, in media and stuff like that. That's when they can kind of take me seriously. Yeah. But otherwise, they have no clue. I think they're fine with me now because they've seen the cookbook and all this. But but it was real scary. It was, and I myself to prove it to, but I'd also everyone else to prove it to as well. So
it's kind of a big weight on your shoulders, I think, because you're trying to get people to believe in you. When you believe in yourself, it's hard enough.
Yeah.
You're trying to tell everyone, no, this is going to work. And so many times I've said things and people are like, oh, Ali, I don't know if that's going to work. And I'm like, no, it's going to work.
Yeah.
I just decided it's happening. I'm like, no, it's going to happen.
And even
like,
if you're probably the same as me. Like, even if I don't have a solution at the moment,
I just know
it'll happen.
Will be one.
It'll be fine.
I'm the exact same.
Yeah.
But people think I'm crazy. Yeah. Do you read The Secret? Have you read The Secret?
No, I haven't. But I kind of know the vibes about it.
You seem to live the life of The Secret.
Really?
It literally changed my life. I think it was like when I was like 17, 18, kind of after all the bad school years, my mum gave it to me. It is a bit intense, but the basic premise of it is that basically thoughts become things. So if you say to yourself, I'm going to be on TV3 next year, people are going to be like, okay, great. But it's working towards that. You still have to work. You don't just sit there and think, I'm going to be on TV3. But you just constantly tell yourself every day, I'm going to do this. And I have done that literally since age 17. So like, even when I went for a job in the Mail on Sunday when I worked there, I remember going for the interview and I really wanted it. And I was like the youngest person to would have worked there. And I was like, I don't know. But I remember the editor gave me his card and I put the card up on my wall and I was like, I'm going to have a card like that and my name's going to be on it. And I'd said that to myself every day for like 3 weeks and then I got the job and I had that card.
Yeah.
Like, so I really believe in stuff like that. But like, it's very hard when you're stressed or you're anxious to feel positive. And that's what The Secret kind of says. It's like, if you start feeling negative, bad things happen. And that's why people get a bit like...
Yeah.
But I kind of believe that. I feel like if you're putting negative thoughts, bad energy kind of comes back
to you. Oh, it does.
Yeah.
And I think also it being a bit fearless as well helps.
Yeah.
And I don't mean... Like, I do have fears and I do get nervous and stuff. But in the sense that like... just jumping and doing things and like I quite literally don't have a lot of fears. Like when I'm drunk I get on roofs and I'm
well,
not
we all know what happens with you and roofs.
You fall
so
off roofs,
stop doing that.
But like I'm literally not afraid of things like that, which is sometimes to my detriment, i.e. when I fall off a 3-story roof, which happened to me, or b, it means I can jump and say, no, I can do this TV thing, or I can do a book and blah blah blah. So I think not having fears or not having inhibitions more so is kind of a good thing, I guess.
We're nearly done now. Only like 2 more questions left.
Oh.
I know. But I wanted to ask you about you and politics, actually, because you're one of the only influencers. I think it's getting a bit stronger now, but definitely for a while that has been very vocal about your beliefs, your opinions. You do not hold back when it comes to like the Catholic Church, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of people would be scared to do that because they make money by working with brands and maybe it will scare brands. So how did you kind of come to the decision to do that and be like, you know what, whatever, this is who I am. I need to stick to this.
Well, I think the marriage referendum was a brilliant thing because it mobilized a lot of people that didn't care about politics beforehand.
Yeah, totally,
that mobilized me. I had no idea who was in power, what was going on. Now I know everything. And I literally watched that doll 24-hour channel. And like, I've become kind of obsessed with it. But I think it's a very luxurious thing to say, I don't care about politics. I'm not into it because it does affect things and it affects people.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to exercise your right to vote and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I remember people even saying to me, like when I was very vocal about like the repeal movement, whatever, people were saying, you know, that can scare brands off and, you know, but it kind of didn't. And I think I was just very, like, very vocal about stuff. And I just made a decision that if it does scare brands and if it does, and again, it goes back to that probably no fear to my detriment. Yeah. Yeah. If it does scare people, I'll make money doing something else. I'll find something else will happen. That's just the way I am. But no, for me to have a voice and to say stuff that is important to you is way more important than anything.
And I think one of the reasons you're so successful as well is the way that you kind of get your message out there, because you're still really funny a lot of the time. Sometimes you are very serious, but I remember you got delivered, was it like a Catholic magazine in through your door?
Oh, yeah.
And you went through every page, but you were obviously very clearly being like, this is the problem with this country, but it was also absolutely gas.
Yeah.
So it's like a good way to kind of get around, like giving someone a message. And so many young people that can be influenced are following you. So I think it's good that you are talking about things like politics or registering to vote. I'd say influencers, honestly, were a huge reason why more people voted this year. Now, I know we had very big referendums in the last 2 years, but I really think influencers did help. And I know a lot of people were like, why aren't influencers talking about it more? But in the end, I think pretty much everyone was like, at least register to vote. At least go and vote.
Yeah.
And that probably was the most important thing to do, because now everyone's registered forever. Like, do you know what I mean? They're going to vote for everything else that comes now.
And I genuinely didn't, like, whatever the referendum was or whatever, like, obviously I'd want people to vote a certain way, but I was kind of like, it's more important to register to vote and to become engaged.
Yeah.
Vote for whoever you want or whatever you want the referendum to be, but
at least use your voice.
Get involved in it. Yeah. And I think once people get involved in it, they get kind of real into it, and that's magical. And like, I think Ireland as a country compared to other countries is a real example of people power. And
there's been so many marches like in the last 18 months.
Yeah. And it's incredible. Fab. Like even people hands on dealing with homelessness and trying to improve the situation. And it's, I think we're a real empathetic country, and we have empathy for people. And I think we're one of the most progressive countries and one of the most forward thinking countries as well. And it's such
a, we won the first for the marriage referendum.
Oh, we were, first by popular earth.
By public vote.
So it's just I love Ireland, really do. Yeah.
You're gonna be here forever, aren't you?
Ah, for
you
sure.
Wouldn't move.
No, and it's funny because you might have been the same growing up. I was like, I'll live in Manhattan, I'll live in London.
I'm like, LA, I'm out of here. But now I actually love coming home.
So do I. Now I love travelling. I'll do that.
Oh,
forever.
I'll travel every week if I can.
But I wanna get more rural. Like me and William's plan is to move to Kirribinny eventually, and that's quite like in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So I just love Ireland.
Would you ever try to break the UK? It's something that people have said to me about you, that they think you would easily break the UK. Yes.
I don't feel like I could.
I mean, look at Graham Norton, for example. Like, I feel like you're in that kind of category where you could have a talk show over there probably, you know.
My
like
God.
Is it something that you've thought about?
Not
or are you
on
very
my radar
on here?
At all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not because I don't want to do it. It's maybe because I'm just doing other things. But but also I don't think I could. But
you don't think you could?
No, I don't know why. I just
you're like challenged.
I feel like the UK is just this massive,
it is
scary
huge.
Thing.
Yeah,
and
it is huge.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm having too much fun here.
So where would you? I always ask this question. Like, where would you like to see yourself in like 5 years? I know it's a hard one because there's so many things you want to accomplish. Anyway, would it be something like literally having a Saturday night talk show in Ireland and kind of moving to something more like that, or
Well, to be honest, I really, really want to get expand Kirribinny into something bigger.
Like homeware.
Yeah. Like if I was to have a dream 5-year plan, it would be a cafe in Dublin and a cafe in Cork.
Okay.
And to be known for doing gorgeous like pop up or evening suppers. To be known for doing gorgeous lunches and just to be known for doing beautiful food, and also to maybe have a little range of like products within Kirribinny.
So well.
And then I'm mad about interiors, and so I'd love a Kirribinny home range.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So that would be my 5-year dream plan.
Yeah.
If other stuff like talk show stuff could happen around that, then but that the Kirribinny stuff is my dream.
And then last question. It's a big one. It's a tough one. It's not that tough. I suppose I just love asking these questions. Mm. What do you want your legacy to be, to leave behind? Like, if you were to die tomorrow, like, oh, what would you like people to say about you? Like, it doesn't have to be career, it could be you as a person, but what would you like to leave behind? And this is on my mind as well, because I just saw Bohemian Rhapsody. Have you seen it?
Oh, no, I haven't. It's, it looks amazing.
Amazing. You yeah. will absolutely love it.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like you and Freddie Mercury would have been best mates.
I love Freddie Mercury. Did you ever hear about him and Princess Diana?
No.
Have you not?
What?
So, they were friends.
Okay.
And one night in London in the 70s or 80s, he took her out to a gay bar, but dressed her up as a man.
Stop it.
Yeah, dressed her up as a man. And she went unnoticed and they had a wild night in London.
There's a scene in the movie where he like dresses up kind of like a king and he throws a party, and Rob Kenny was sitting beside me. And I was like, sorry, is that James Cavanagh? We were both like, this is a joke.
Oh my God, like, I'm dying to see it now.
You have to see it.
Yeah.
But the one thing I kind of got from that movie, and kind of a Star Is Born, there's lots of really cool movies out at the moment, was just kind of people's legacies and after they die, like what people thought. And even with Queen, like Bohemian Rhapsody was a massive failure at the time, which I did not realise. Absolutely bombed.
Okay, people, I need to see this movie. I thought I knew stuff about Queen, but obviously
So did I. And then you kind of realise it's actually years later that it became huge.
No
then
way.
When Live Aid happened, it went to number one, and that's kind of all how it happened. So it's such an interesting thing, but it got me thinking about legacies. And I think when you're in this industry as well, like everything is so go, 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 and it's fast paced. It's hard to like take a step back and be like, you know what, I've had a really good year. This is actually amazing. People think this, you know, I'm really proud of that. So like those kind of things. So what would you like people to think?
Like in a real, like, not to disappoint you, but in a kind of basic way, like, I don't know, like he made me laugh. Like
yeah.
I really,
no, I love that.
Really love making people laugh.
Yeah.
I always think I'd love to try some stand-up comedy or
like... Oh my God, I would love to see you in stand-up comedy.
Yeah, because like I do certain talks in schools and colleges, but it's more like a bit of stand-up in it. Like
yeah.
I love telling anecdotal funny stories. And
yeah.
when I get a laugh out of people, it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
So yeah, if my like simple, like he made me laugh, and
yeah.
that I'd be delighted with that.
Yeah, I think everyone would say that about you now, anyway.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it. You
this
have a
really
podcast
fun.
Series coming out, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to give it away.
Okay.
But we're recording it tomorrow.
Very exciting.
We're doing like 4 episodes in one day.
Oh my God, amazing!
And it's going to be themed around like big topics like love, society,
Brilliant.
Food, like, but I'm going to be talking to a very specific group of people.
Okay.
And it's a specific group of people that I love.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
But each episode will have a specific theme, and we're only, it's
very
like
exciting.
A limited edition. There's only going to be 6 of them. And
oh,
then
really?
It's going to pump them out there. Yeah.
Oh my God. You're going to put them all out at once,
same
like
time.
A Netflix series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people are going to be binging on the
yeah.
podcast. Oh
yeah.
my God.
But it's just a one-off thing that I'm doing
okay.
and I'm just so excited about it.
Well, we're so excited to
yeah.
And thank you so much for coming on episode 1.
Thank you for
class.
Having me.
Thank you. Woo. So that's the end of episode 1 of the Gosscast, sponsored by Dresses.ie. So like I was saying at the start, so happy to have Dresses.ie on board. Make sure to check out their website. They always have amazing offers on, and you can literally get everything there, from shoes, accessories, clothes, jeans, dresses, everything. I actually wore a lot of their dresses when we were in New York for New York Fashion Week, and I'm still wearing them now. I absolutely love them. So brilliant brand to partner with. Want to say a huge thank you to James as well for coming in today. He's a busy man, and I'm really excited to hear his podcast series and see what he does, because he's such a pleasure to chat to, and genuinely one of the most genuine people in the industry. And hand to God, he hasn't changed one bit since I first met him about 5 years ago. So yeah, it's great to see all his success, and I'm wishing him all the success again. So I hope you enjoyed that episode, and we will be back again next Sunday for episode 2 of the Gosscast.